This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome back to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. There's been midweek Premier League and the EFL action, and of course we'll be previewing the upcoming fixtures as well. It's Jack Reeve joined alongside Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings today. Mark, you were saying off air that you went to the Tottenham match. Yeah, are you regretting that now?
A five-goal thriller, missing a five-goal thriller, and my mate, my best pal, Ralph Hasenhüttl, celebrating on the pitch at 2-2 and 3-2. What would I not like about that? I mean, if the opposition wasn't Tottenham, I would have probably been on there with him. It was a chastening experience, really, for Spurs, who were awful. Southampton were their usual sort of excellent, well-coached selves, and in that kind of classic, it's a funny old game, Southampton should have been out of sight at half-time. They weren't, and they actually won the game probably during their quietest period, which is, you know, just how football works, isn't it, sometimes? But, you know, we're going to talk about the race for the top four in a little while, but, you know, Spurs were favourites going into that game, and now it's flipped again. You wouldn't trust any of them teams, I don't think, to be honest, in sort of that battle for fourth place at the moment. But it was a nice enough game. I took my niece for her first ever visit to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. So she got the full experience, followed by, every Spurs fan moaning on the train home as well. So, you might as well start them off like that, because, you at least get used to, the life ahead, don't you?
Is she already a Tottenham fan then, or was that the aim of the mission?
No, she is. She's Spurs, but she just hadn't. To be honest, her dad and sort of brother support. You don't want to mention this. They support Arsenal, so she kind of couldn't really go along with them. She didn't want to go and watch Arsenal, and like me and my dad usually go. I suppose she felt a little bit weird, maybe a bit younger, going with her uncle and her granddad. I don't know why, but. You know, I suppose it's not always a natural, is it, to sort of go somewhere like that, maybe with your uncle and granddad. But now she's 18, she sort of said she wanted to go. So we took her along. But no, she's been a Spurs fan for a while. She just, more of a TV viewer, probably because she didn't feel like, comfortable enough to go along. But now she does. So I doubt it'd be her last time, but hopefully she's not the ultimate bock, and we can get a win with her in tow soon enough.
Excellent. It's been a fascinating midweek round of fixtures to down near the bottom of the table. Newcastle Everton, Mark, let's touch briefly on that. Of course, we've still got some, we've got Liverpool and Arsenal still to play this midweek, but down near the bottom, the majority of those games have been completed, and Newcastle picked up a big win, and it's dragged Everton right into it.
Yeah, I mean, this time last week we spoke about it, and I said I wasn't sure on the business that they'd done, but I just felt that they had enough to stay up, and I do have to sort of question myself, and maybe was I getting sucked into the reputation of Everton, rather than just looking at sort of what was going on, because after that performance against Newcastle, you have to be, if you're an Everton fan, you'd have to be massively concerned by. That showing, I thought Newcastle, deserved the win. It wasn't an amazing game of football, but they really are, I suppose, down at the bottom. But, Newcastle, I think, looked like they had an identity and sort of a way of how they wanted to play. Don't think you could say that about Everton. Really just a nothing performance. And they've got dragged into it, haven't they? They kind of sleepwalked into this situation where even when they sacked Rafa, You felt like they had a couple of games, didn't they? Because they had Aston Villa at home, Newcastle away. It felt like a decent sort of springboard for somebody to build up. Maybe it was only one win or a couple of draws, but suddenly lost both of those games. We've seen Newcastle pick up victories. Norwich have started to win matches, and they are now very much in a relegation battle. And they need to realise that. If they don't, they're in big, big trouble, because Newcastle were definitely better than they were, in sort of the early part of the season. Norwich have got a bit of confidence about them. I even think that Watford, even though they lost against West Ham, it was a classic Roy Hodgson performance. And once they get Dennis and Saar back with the that defensive solidity, they can pick up points as well. Burnley, I think, are going to struggle to win enough games, but are still competitive. And Everton just, at the moment, don't look ready for that battle. And that is a massive concern, Jack. And I know that you last week were trying to push me into the Everton relegation train, weren't you? You sort of clearly fancied them to be sort of sucked into a bit of bother.
Well, I just watched them, quite a few times in the past month. And I feel as if you're going to fight your way out of a relegation battle, you need an identity, you need something about you. And I watch Everton, I'm just not sure what that is. And I know that they've been, struggling with injuries at points. And of course, Rafa is gone now, so you would expect some form of upturn. But just didn't see that against Newcastle. And the worry for me, like you said, Mark, is that lack of identity. I don't quite see that at the moment. So Everton struggling elsewhere. There were draws for both Burnley and Norwich City. As you said, Mark, Watford lost again. It feels as if, doesn't it, it will probably be Burnley, Norwich and Watford down there. Who do you think has the best chance of them three of breaking out?
Watford. Because, that game against West Ham, it's a big deflection from a Bowen shot. I think Watford probably felt like they deserved a point out of that game. They got their point at Burnley. And I don't think goals is an issue for them as much as what it has been for, obviously, Burnley, are going to struggle to score goals just the way that they play. And Norwich, for most of the season at least, have struggled to create and convert opportunities. I think Watford's problem was defensive organisation. And, we mentioned last week that we felt that Hodgson could do that, and they got their clean sheet at Burnley, probably deserved another one against West Ham. And like I say, once they get the attacking players back, but Saar is somebody that's got probably the ability to play for sort of a sort of top 6-7 team in the Premier League. And, he'll be back from AFCON, hopefully over all of his injury problems. They would be the ones of those three that I think, if Everton are to get dragged into it, they're probably, that's the team they've got to keep their eye on, probably more than Burnley, who've got games in hand but don't look like winning enough. And Norwich, who are battling hard and are staying committed, but ultimately, without being too harsh on your boys, Jack, I just don't think they've got the quality over the 38 games.
No, it seems a fair assessment. Let's touch briefly on, sadly, what was the main story in the West Ham against Watford game, and that was surrounding Kurt Zouma. Now, I'm sure everyone listening knows the situation which has brought this story upon us. He did start against Watford. Mark, were you surprised by that decision?
They say you should never be surprised by anything in football. I was astonished that he started. I mean, given that West Ham had issued a statement saying that they were going to, take strong punishment against him, I definitely didn't expect to see him lining up that night. And David Moyes' statement afterwards about picking him, or was it even before, picking him because he's one of West Ham's better players, is disgraceful, really. And I think that Moyes and West Ham maybe didn't realise just how much of a backlash there would be against it. And if they did, then that's a bad misjudgment. But isn't it terrible, really, that football is so tribal that it's now sort of turned into West Ham almost, that some, not all of their supporters, but some of their supporters kind of looking to defend it because everybody else has gone on the attack. I mean, I think there are sort of situations where you just have to, even if it's your team, just go, we've got this hopelessly wrong. Let's let the manager know. Let's let the owners know. Let's let the player in question know that, this is unacceptable. And I think that for all teams going forward, when bits like this happen and you go to like Luis Suarez, when the Liverpool fans back Luis Suarez in that racism incident with Patrice Evra, and just like with the T-shirts and stuff like that, and just like, it's not right, that you can still fully support your team and not agree with everything they do.
Absolutely. Well said, Mark. Let's move on to our match of the day. And it's Manchester United against Southampton we're going for this week. 8-13 Manchester United, 9-2 Southampton, 16-5 about the draw. This game, a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. Mark, I feel as if I've asked this question more than most during the lifetime of this podcast, but what is going on with Manchester United?
Yeah, I mean, it is incredible, really, isn't it? That if anything, they look a bit worse than when under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. At least it was fun under Ollie, and they were scoring goals but couldn't defend. I think they've been a little bit unlucky, in fairness to them. The last couple of matches, like Middlesbrough in the Cup, they created enough chances to win three or four matches and didn't, and then went out on penalties. And then even against Burnley, I mean, things just went against them a little bit. 52 shots they've had in their last two games, only scored two goals. You would imagine even with sort of worse forwards than what United have got, you would expect a better return from those 52 shots. I mean, ordinarily it said it's a roughly speaking sort of 9 or 10 shots per goal. So, you know, that you would have, even if you're having a barren sort of time, be looking at least one more goal, and that gets you at least one more win, you know? So
Is it fair to say it's unlucky though, Mark, it's been over a long spell of time.
Yeah, it's not completely unlucky, Jack. I'm just saying in the last two matches, you know, because there have been two shocking results, if you think about it, you know, the draw against Burnley, going out of the cup against Middlesbrough. And I just want to say that I actually think those last couple of games, like statistically, it's not been quite as bad as some of the other performances we've seen from United. But a clear issue they've got is scoring goals. And you would not have imagined that that could be the case with Bruno Fernandes, Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, Edinson Cavani, Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, that should not be an issue. And it is, because if you have a look at their 7 home games under Ralf Rangnick, 6 of those, they've failed to score more than once. And defensively, you don't fancy them to keep clean sheets, even with Maguire and Varane at the heart of the defence. And De Gea has played reasonably well this season as well. They're not looking like keeping clean sheets. And if you only score one goal, you're just not going to win enough matches. So they need to find a way to loosen up. And under Ollie, we were saying they need to find a way to tighten up. So they're kind of, the balance just isn't right in trying to make themselves structurally sort of better organised and this kind of process. They've lost that flair, I think, in some games, not in all of them. Like I say, Middlesbrough, there were enough chances to easily have won that game. But last 20 minutes against Burnley didn't feel like the goal was massively coming. And that, I think, needs to be a concern, because you associate Manchester United and sort of all of the big teams when they're chasing a game like that to at least be sort of battering the opposition, and the goalkeeper maybe pulls off 5 or 6 amazing saves. But it wasn't really like that. It was fairly comfortable, I think, for, you know, Sean Dyche's side.
Absolutely. And with that being said, we wanted our listeners to let us know who they thought were the best bet in terms of the top four. Of course, Manchester United still a big team in that conversation. There was a big market move regarding Spurs after their defeat last night. They went from 6-4 into 2-1. We'll go off the new poll. Manchester United 13-8, Tottenham 2-1, Arsenal 9-4, West Ham 9-1 to make the top four. And Mark, you'll be happy to hear that Tottenham's still coming out the top of the vote with 32%. Our listeners couldn't split Manchester United and Arsenal, 25% of the vote each. 18% of the vote going to West Ham. So one of the tighter polls that we've ran. Tottenham have drifted slightly in the market out to 2-1. Our listeners would be backing them to reach the top four. Would you?
No, not massively at those prices. I mean, the thing about Manchester United is they've been awful for a lot of the season, and they're still right in the mix for it, haven't they? You just wonder how much worse things can get. I mean, I was asked about 6 weeks ago, like, for a good anti-post bet for the Premier League, and it was to oppose Manchester United in the top four. It's weird. They've drifted, and I kind of am not as anti them now as what I was. I think Arsenal would be my pick. Bermuda got in touch on Twitter to say he fancies Arsenal as well. They're the most reliable at beating bottom half sides.
Yeah, fair shout.
I think, you know, they've had their issues in that regard. They didn't beat Burnley a couple of weeks ago. They one of the only teams that's lost to Everton in recent months. But and I would have issues, I suppose, about them just in terms of their goal scoring, because it's Lacazette and Ketia, and that's about it. So I do wonder if they will be as reliable at beating bottom half side. So, yeah, Nick Monday got in touch to say, what about Wolves? He's back to 175-1. They've got a tough fixture list, but I just wonder if they've got a little bit too much to do. I probably would maybe still edge towards Tottenham, given the fact that they have drifted after they lost to Southampton. But it would be by sort of process of elimination, in that at least they've got a team that I think you can back to score goals in Kane and Son. And you just assume that Conte will sort the defence out. He had done, and then it's got a little bit worse again in recent times. Bentancur looked quite good when he came on, will improve the midfield. It really is tight between them three. I'm not sure West Ham have got the squad depth to last the distance, but they are still up there. I'd probably just go towards Tottenham, but it's going to be a mess, really. I think it's going to be who's least worst, really, rather than sort of somebody coming on really strong.
Absolutely.
I went around in circles there, didn't I? But yeah, it's tough. It's
we
really
got there
tough.
In the end. We got there in the end. Really tough. We've spoken about Manchester United. You, of course, watched Southampton in the flesh on Wednesday night, Mark. How did they look?
They were fantastic, particularly first half. I'd look at the stats at half time. 15 shots to Southampton to 2 to Spurs. They had over 60% possession. It looked like they had more players on the pitch. Really well-organised team. Salisu at the back's a really good player as well, actually. Stiffens them up a lot, because they'd had that vulnerability, hadn't they, to them defensively, I think, at times. But he looks really strong and has grown. Had a quiet first season, and I think he suffered with injuries, but looks the part now. Wouldn't be surprised if sort of wealthier clubs were looking at him. The midfield, like the delivery of Ward-Prowse, and the fact that he scares teams. You know, like there were moments on Wednesday night where it looked like a midfielder was going to foul a Southampton player, you know, in that sort of 25 yards from goal. And they actually just let Southampton carry on with the ball because they didn't want to give away free kicks. But, you know, Armstrong looked dangerous. Up front, was it Portia and Shea Adams worked hard, were a threat. They put good crosses into the box. You know, I just think they're a good team that punch above their weight. My question mark about them for this game is, I think it's difficult for teams to back up a big away performance with another one. Sort of, you know, what they played Wednesday night and then Saturday lunchtime. That's quite a harsh schedule, isn't it? You know, given how much that to put into, you know, twice come from behind to win at Tottenham. I mean, that's impressive. And, you know, fitness will be the biggest concern I've got for them, because I think on ability, they're going to give United a real good game.
You reminded me there, Mark, saying that players weren't wanting to foul Southampton players in case Ward-Prowse got a free kick, of when the glory days of Stoke, when opposition goalkeepers throwing the corner, same Rory Delap throwing.
Yeah, I mean, it just causes panic, and you know, and they're using it by not using it now, because obviously you don't give away the foul, and that means that you've got an opportunity in a dangerous area. So it's interesting, really. I think that sometimes you probably still are better off conceding the foul and then hoping Ward-Prowse doesn't smash it in the top corner.
What would be your bet for this game, then, if you'd have one?
Yeah, I it wouldn't be a strong fancy, but I would go for Southampton or draw a double chance, just purely because United are struggling to score goals at the moment. I am worried about the kind of backing up from Wednesday to Saturday lunchtime. But they are quite a fit team, Southampton. So hopefully, you know, they can keep that enthusiasm going for another 90 minutes.
8 other Premier League games to preview. We'll start with that now. 3 o'clock on Saturday, Brentford against Crystal Palace. Mark, I have to say, we both get on with Bruce, but he was relentless with his text to me this week, saying, oh, Palace are going to saunter to victory against Norwich City. And his dreams were crushed after just 38 seconds. They travelled to Brentford this weekend. Will they saunter to victory there?
No, I mean, yeah, and Zaha knocked his penalty in rather than about 8 yards wide.
Nearly went out for a throw in that.
He did. Yeah, remarkable penalty miss from Zaha. They've only won two of their last 12 Premier League games, Crystal Palace. I mean, you wouldn't have thought that, would you? I think talk about them. In this game, I'm going for a draw just because I think Palace struggle to win. You know, they play well, don't win enough games. Just so many teams down in that sort of in the bottom half just lack a striker, don't they? And it makes a big old difference if you've got that forward that kind of can take you from a level that sort of around about 13th, 14th up to 7th or 8th. West Ham with Antonio and Bowen now, you know, they kind of had that, haven't they? And that's what I think has really helped them push on. Probably the next step for Palace is to find somebody to play up front who they can rely on for double figures.
Frank Lampard has managerial history against Leeds United. You'll need a win this weekend. It's Everton against Leeds.
Yeah. The stop crying your heart out, Frank Lampard, isn't it? I think he might be crying again. I'm going to go for Leeds draw no bet. Back-to-back free goal hauls in their away matches for Leeds United. Looked at their team in that 3-3 draw against Aston Villa last night on Wednesday, and it looked stronger than what we've maybe seen in some other matches this season. So they haven't got everybody back, and you know Phillips and Bamford are still missing. But around them, it looked a lot sort of more like the Leeds team that we've come to know, and a lot of people have come to love as well. So I was just looking at them, draw no bet at Everton. Frank Lampard, one of the big problems he had at Chelsea was he couldn't coach the defence. And you saw Thomas Tuchel went in, just immediately sorted that out. Mina got injured, didn't he? So you do want against Newcastle. Damari Gray got injured as well. He's trying to integrate new players with Dele Alli and Van der Beek, who want to occupy the same position, I would have thought, although he played Van der Beek deeper when he went on. So I still think he's trying to figure everything out. So, Leeds, draw no bet could be the way to go, because you'd fancy them to score goals. Whether they're good enough defensively, you never know. But I do fancy them to score at Goodison.
Another home side desperately in need of a winner, Watford, and they welcome Brighton this weekend.
Yeah, all right, I'm gonna knock your socks off with this stat.
Go on then.
Brighton, the last 20 matches, how many times do you think they've won?
In the last 20?
Yeah.
Seven.
Two.
Two? Really?
Two of their last 20 games in sort of normal time. They've won extra time at West Brom. They've won two of their last 20 games.
My socks have literally been knocked off.
So do I want to back them at 6-5 away from home against the Roy Hodgson sort of defensive wall? No, I don't. So I'll go for Watford or draw double chance. Like Brighton, when they play well, it's fantastic. Bissouma ran the show against Spurs in the FA Cup last week in the second half. They missed a couple of chances, but they just don't win. They just don't win enough games. Like their price fully sort of reflects their performances, but the performances just don't win them enough games for me to want to back them at 6-5 away from home.
I feel as if Brighton and Palace are the two sides where everyone kind of says, yeah, they're doing really well this season, they're playing well. And we've just come to the conclusion after those stats, Mark, actually, they don't win football matches.
I think Brighton are doing well. I mean, for Brighton to be in the top half is a really great achievement for them. They're punching above their weight budget-wise. They've got a good coach in Graham Potter. They dominate a lot of games. They just don't win enough of them for me to back them at 6-5. You know, they are, because they're so good on XG, their odds, I think, make it quite difficult to back them most weeks, just purely because between the boxes, I just wonder if they're clinical enough in the final third. And, you know, they do give away some silly moments, you know, in their own sort of third as well. So, yeah, two wins in 20 games. I couldn't believe it myself, but it's true. I've checked it.
No, that's stat of the week for sure. I was at Carrow Road on Wednesday night. I'll be back again on Saturday evening as Dean Smith's men welcome Manchester City.
Yeah, I think that this will be quite comfortable for Manchester City. Of course, they had their troubles at Carrow Road. Feels like a lifetime ago that they lost at Norwich last time that Norwich were in the Premier League. Yeah. Don't expect any mistake this time around. Man City to win to nil. They've played eight, and so the seven of their eight wins against teams in the bottom seven, and that's quite a lot of numbers there, but have been wins to nil for Manchester City. So generally speaking, when they kind of drop down a level and play the kind of bottom teams, they win and they win to nil.
Let's move on to Sunday's action then, and we'll start with Burnley against Liverpool. Burnley have had a tricky run of fixtures, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, and there's more to come. And you know, I just don't think that they're sort of good enough really in the final third to stay up this season. Sean Dyche does a really good job in terms of like making them what they've become over the years, but this looks like one season too far. I expect Liverpool to win. Probably won't be pretty. Liverpool and under 3.5 goals.
Newcastle, Aston Villa. Can Newcastle continue from their fine win on Tuesday night?
Yeah, maybe. I was looking at both teams to score as the best bet. Newcastle, even in the dark days of Steve Bruce, only failed to score at home to Manchester City and Chelsea. So, like I say, even when Steve Bruce was in charge, as long as they weren't playing the right top teams, they were able to make their mark in those games. Villa have scored in 16 of their last 18 Premier League games as well. So I'm expecting action at both ends. And what could be a high-scoring Sunday in at least some of the games? I'm thinking the live games particularly. Newcastle v Villa is a live game, and we'll get to Leicester v West Ham later on.
Absolutely. In between that, we'll talk about Spurs against Wolves.
Yeah, I think just oppose Tottenham, really. I know I've said about Spurs for the top four, but I do think it's going to be just a real slog to the line. And Wolves are just a tricky team for anybody to play. They've actually won more away games than they have at home this season, which is a surprise in many respects, but maybe isn't when you look at the way that they play. And they are a team that likes to defend very solidly, don't create a huge amount, but are then looking, you know, on the break. And we saw them against Manchester United go and win that game 1-0. If Tottenham don't start well in this game, I think the crowd will turn, and you know, it just becomes a tricky one for Spurs. And odds on, I think you can leave them alone after what happened on Wednesday night against Southampton for sure.
And the afternoon kickoff on Sunday, Leicester against West Ham. What's the best for this?
Yeah, it is late. We've mentioned this many times. Too late for me, this, the Sunday 4:30 game.
It's too late. It can't be.
It feels quite late to me. Both teams to score in this game as well. Leicester, absolute joke defensively. We're speaking before they've gone to Anfield. Hopefully it doesn't age horrendously and they keep a clean sheet at Anfield. But they don't look like they're going to keep too many clean sheets at the moment, does it? And yeah, even when they lost that game at Spurs, if you remember, in like injury time, they could have conceded about 4 or 5 goals before that. It was I think Tottenham created the highest XG away from home this season, and just not good enough defensively. But they have got quality players going forward, and it sounds like Zouma's not going to play for West Ham. As David Moyes says, he is one of their better players, and I do think he'll be a miss if he doesn't play. So he can't play, in my opinion. He shouldn't play. And I think that could leave a bit of a hole in the West Ham defence if he doesn't. And Leicester are good enough to score against most teams in the Premier League, particularly at home.
No Dan Childs on the podcast this week, but fear not, Aaron Ashley will guide you through the EFL best bets.
And now we're joined by Aaron Ashley of the Racing Post Sports Desk. He's an able and willing substitute for Dan Childs, who's struggling with illness, so we felt it was best to stick him in bed and with a lemon sip. So Aaron, you're going to hopefully provide the listeners with a couple of winners for the EFL. What's your best bet, mate?
Yeah, big shoes to fill, Lango. But my best bet comes in League One, mate, and it's Accrington at home to Crewe. I think 4-5 is a really good price here. Home is very much where the heart is for Stanley. They've lost only 4 of their 16 league games at the Wham Stadium this season. And in midweek on Tuesday, they were deserved 2-0 winners at home to Oxford. That took their unbeaten run at home to 6. And that sequence of results has seen them beat league leaders Rotherham, as well as hold MK Dons and Sunderland to draws. And those sides sit 3rd and 4th, respectively. So they really have to be fancying their chances at home to second bottom Crewe. They're 8 points adrift of safety, and they're on a run of 4 straight defeats. They've also lost 8 of their last 9 away league games, conceding 19 goals over that period. So they really must be fearing the worst.
Okay, I'm just thinking about sort of filling the Charlesy shoes. I hope that doesn't involve the amount of vodka Red Bull he used to knock back on the dance floors of Watford. And have you got anything else for us, Aaron?
Yeah, just one more bet. Just one more bet for me, and it comes in League Two, and it's a big game at the bottom of League Two between Colchester and Carlisle. And on the back of four straight defeats, a 300-mile-plus trip to Colchester must be the last thing Carlisle are wanting. They paid the ultimate price for last weekend's defeat at Salford. Five players that started that game got ruled out for injury. They missed the loss at Port Vale in midweek, and manager Keith Millen has said that they're pretty much definitely all out this weekend too. That includes captain Callum Guy, centre-back Rod McDonald and influential midfielder John Mellish are all out. So they've got, I'm really fancy Colchester here. They're about 11-8. Carlisle have only racked up one shot on target in their last two league losses, and they scored both of them. So Colchester, who have improved since putting Wayne Brown in interim charge, they've lost only one in five since he was appointed. I think everything points to them being a decent bet at 11-8.
Mark, it feels as if on last week's episode of Bets Club, we had a few good bets go in. Let's run over the overview this week, and we'll start with the prop shop.
Yeah, well, this was the problem, wasn't it? They went in, we had Watford keep a clean sheet, you give Boreham Wood quite a big shout out. I'm gutted I didn't put them up as
you were teasing with it, weren't you?
I was, yeah. It was annoying, but yeah, it was a blank on the sort of this little aspect of it. So hopefully we can return back to form. We're going to start with the prop shop with Romeu to be carded in that Manchester United versus Southampton game. I did mention about the energy levels of those Southampton players. And of course, if you do get tired, I think your sort of discipline is one of the first things to go, and you maybe don't chase back as much as you would do, like little cheap fouls and stuff like that. He's 5-2 to be carded in one place. There's 2-1 elsewhere. I don't think that's a terrible price either, if the 5-2 goes. He's had 6 yellow cards this season. By far the most fouls in the Southampton team with 39. Salisu next on 33. Nobody else more than 24. He was booked in the difficult away games at Chelsea and Tottenham. United, with the way that Fernandez in that position he plays, tricky customer to look after. I think Romeu will do well to avoid a card.
You mentioned there you gave a big up to Boreham Wood. They did get the job done against Bournemouth. Let's get a long shot and hopefully a winner this week.
Yeah, so Spezia 3-1 at home to Fiorentina. Spezia, I mean, it's a remarkable run of form for a tiny team in Italy that hadn't done much for most of the season. Last 6 games, they've won 4 of those, including away to AC Milan and Napoli. So they clearly got the taste for an upset. And they're 3-1, like I say, at home to Fiorentina, who are now missing Vlahovic, their star striker, scored 41% of their goals this season. He was sold to Juventus. I just don't see how they can be the same team without him. And they lost 3-0 to Lazio last weekend. And, you know, look vulnerable to me at even money.
A treble for this week, Mark.
Yeah, we've already mentioned 2 of them. So both teams to score in the Sunday matches, Newcastle against Villa, Leicester against West Ham. Not sure about any of the 4 teams defensively. West Ham probably the best of the quartet. But, you know, they're trying to deal with, even without Vardy, what is still a pretty explosive Leicester front line. So both teams to score in the Super Sunday matches. And then to complete the treble, we're going for a derby in Spain, Barcelona to beat Espanyol. I think Barcelona have left behind some of their early season results, performances. Look at the kind of players they've brought in. Adama Traore, Ferran Torres, Aubameyang. Changes the whole dynamic of the forward line. Pedri's return from injury. They beat Atletico Madrid 4-2 last weekend. You know, the fun seems like it's coming back to Barcelona. So I'm expecting them for a derby win away at Espanyol.
Strongest bet of the week, Mark. Give it to me.
Yeah, I quite like it. I'm going to carry on with Barcelona to win at Espanyol for all the reasons I've just said, but I'll just sort of mention Espanyol as well. Now, they'll raise their game for this match. You know, quite obvious, really. You know, it's what you would do if you're the smaller team. So not going to be easy for Barcelona, but Espanyol, 4 defeats in 5. Only got 1 point in that time. They were also knocked out of the Copa del Rey by lower league opponents. So definitely don't go into this game in sort of the best form, and they'll be hoping that as the cliche goes, that sort of form goes out the window in derby games. But I'm not sure that it does, not to any great extent anyway.
Mark, we were running a bit behind on last week's podcast. We went to the sandwich shop that we liked, didn't we? There was another fine sandwich picked up on Fleet Street. It was nice to see you last week. We had a lovely time, didn't we?
We could have done without that queue, though. I don't know. Were they after your autograph, Jack? There was a lot of people in that queue. I had to put all my meetings behind for the rest of the day. It's incredible. But it'd be, sometimes patience is rewarded, isn't it?
You have to wait
for your quality.
But because of that sandwich, it meant that we had to cut the story short regarding Patrick Cliver. Now, long-time listeners will know that this is a long-running suspense. Now, Mark, do we have time this week for you to disclose that night with Patrick?
Well, I'd say what happened was this started... It started many years ago on TalkSport when I sort of let the presenter Danny Kelly know that I bumped into Patrick Cliver in a bar in Turin, and he then sort of just did this long running thing that it went on for like literally years of him saying we can't talk about that night, and so all that people want to do is talk about that night with Patrick Cliver now. It's not as thrilling as it sounds. There are bits I have to leave out, Jack. I've told you off air, but we can't divulge those. I've just got to keep it on the low. But what happened? Well, the bit I can tell is we were in we've been drinking all day. Juventus versus Barcelona. Then we went out that night in Turin. If you've been to Turin, there's not a lot going on. We found sort of the liveliest place. It's called the Apple, One Apple, I think the bar's called, okay. Owned by the Conte family. I think it's Antonio Conte's brother that owns it. So we were in there, and the drinks were very expensive. I can understand sort of where Conte can look so sharp in his designer suit. So we were in there, wasn't many other people, not much going on, it has to be said. And then all of a sudden, an absolute superstar of world football, Patrick Cliver, just strolls in, and I think most people, given it was a pretty exclusive place, most people were prepared to leave him alone, but not us. Obviously we went over, bothered him for many minutes, he was a nice enough lad, but I can't tell you the whole story, but that's most of it. I'll put some meat on the bones, but the rest has to be told off air, I'm afraid.
Did you ask for a selfie?
I've had a picture with Patrick. Did I ask him or did he ask me? I can't remember which way around it was, but we had a photo. I was very much worse for wear, unfortunately.
Excellent. Well, there we go, Tom. He's been pestering us for the last few weeks to hear that, and brilliant. Mark and Patrick Cliver. There we go. Next question. Celtic, are they a good price for the Conference League, Mark? Playing some sensational football and have an easy first game with Bodo selling half of their team. I must say, I haven't tuned into much of the Conference League, so you'll have to guide me through this.
Jack, I love the way there that you've swerved the username. I couldn't pronounce it either.
Is it Rari? That's the problem.
No, so it's Rairi. So I think that Celtic are, we'll get to sort of our best bets in a minute for the three competitions, but I think that of the outsiders, they were definitely one I looked at. The football they played can be dangerous to sort of, overrate on one showing. So I watched the Old Firm game, like I suppose a lot of people did. If you don't watch loads of Scottish Premiership, you maybe just pick that game up. I mean, they did look very good, and they've signed some players as well to kind of, I think, bring through the football that Postecoglou wants to play. And I couldn't put anybody off at around about 25-1, to win the Conference League. It's a wide open competition, 7-1 the field. Roma, Marseille and Leicester head that market. There's nothing to go on in terms of how seriously everybody will take it. I'm pretty sure that Celtic will have a good old go at it. And I couldn't put anyone off at 25-1. I think I'd rather back it than lay it.
I'm really sorry I couldn't pronounce. I think it's Rari.
I forgive you, Jack.
the Irish spelling of it. A name I can pronounce is Rob. Rob says, do prices factor in the element of teams who could do without the Europa League / Conference League, or is there value in looking at who will play weakened teams to be knocked out? You know, the Champions League and the Europa League are returning, Mark, and I'd like to get your thoughts on both. Who do you fancy in the European competitions?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think in terms of the outright markets, we'll start with the Champions League. I mean, I think there'll be an English winner. I think that the, probably not Manchester United, but the other three are just so strong.
Yeah.
You know, I think we could get upsets elsewhere. Like, you know, I mentioned Celtic in the Conference League. Champions League, I just don't see it. I think that the big boys are so much stronger. And if I had to pick one of the English teams, I'd probably go for Liverpool at this stage. I think their squad depth is so much better than it has been. They've slowly been recruiting, you know, to build up and bulk up that squad. And then you even in midfield, I think Harvey Elliott is just could be something really special, you know. And
beautiful goal against Cardiff, isn't it?
It was. And, you know, he probably won't start big Champions League games at the moment. But I think if he came on, I don't think he would let anyone down. And I also think that, you know, that's the kind of player that's maybe, you know, on the bench now for Liverpool that Klopp can turn to. Maybe it's someone like Thiago Alcantara as well. And he hasn't always had those options on the bench. You know, he's often sort of fighting with just 11, 12 players or whatever. It's not the case anymore. Still a little bit weak, I suppose, in the fullback areas, particularly just can't really replace Alexander-Arnold, for instance. But I think that Liverpool, if they had to play Man City, wouldn't be afraid of them. They've played some amazing games against them in recent years. With the crowd back at Anfield, just nobody wants to go there. And I felt that Liverpool were probably the fairest alternative to what I think are worthy favourites in Manchester City. I would chuck in, again, with Chelsea, yeah, I think a nice draw against Lille, play the kind of football that suited to knockouts as they showed last season. And I just think that it will be an English winner. And if I had to go for one of them, it would be Liverpool.
You're so surprised about Liverpool as well, Mark. Sorry to interject. That
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they've got Inter, haven't they, in the last 16. I think Italian teams have struggled at the very... I love watching Italian football, but I think that their teams have struggled at sort of Europe's top table for a while now, even like Juventus falling off. And you know, it's just not maybe as strong as it sort of was or needs to be, really, to compete with the English teams. In the Europa League, last 10 years, only two countries have won the Europa League, England and Spain. It's 7-3 to Spain. So I'm going to look at Spanish teams to win it. I thought Real Betis at 25-1 would be fun, give you a run for your money. They're going well in the Copa del Rey as well. They beat Rayo in the semi-final 2-1 last night, that was. So a team that's made for knockout competitions, got some very flair, you know, some really exciting and flair players. The final is in Seville. It's in Sevilla's home stadium, but Betis wouldn't have liked to win it there. So, you know, I still think they'll take the competition seriously. I've mentioned them a few times, haven't I, over the winter. But I think Barcelona at 8-1, they've got a hard draw against Napoli. But it's just the kind of price that you'd be absolutely booting yourself if Barcelona won the Europa League 8-1. Dortmund are favourites. They've got Rangers. Expect them to go through. But they chuck in some absolute horror shows. You know, like last week, they were taunted by Bayer Leverkusen. They've got Haaland, you know, way better than sort of most Europa League sort of level teams, but they stick the place out too often for me, Dortmund. So I'd probably be looking to take them on. And in the Conference League, I'd go for Rennes at 10-1. They're second in France on expected goals behind the obvious team in Paris Saint-Germain. Got some exciting players, Sulemana and Doku, I think, will probably end up playing higher level than Conference League and probably be sold for decent money in time at Rennes. And I know that it looks like they're going to take the competition seriously, because when they'd already qualified, they looked to send a full strength team to try to knock Tottenham out. Eventually they did, because the game didn't go ahead and Spurs were kicked out of the competition. But it looked to me when they did that they wanted Spurs out because they saw them as a big threat. I've got in sort of answer to the question from Rob on sort of, you know, is it factored in that the type of teams that could rest players? I mean, I think it's on a sort of team by team basis. I think it's all about sort of looking at the squads when they're named. You know, it's hard to know at this stage, you know, will Barcelona take it seriously? Will Leicester take the Conference League seriously? They should, because it's all they've got left. But Brendan Rodgers claimed a couple of weeks ago, that it was only a few weeks ago, that he'd never even heard of the competition. Now, it might be the kind of thing that saves him from getting the sack. So, you know, I think that it changes quite quickly. What I would say about Barcelona and the Europa League in general is that the winners get a spot in the Champions League. And while you can't sort of bank on that at this stage, once you get to about the quarterfinals, sometimes it can be easier to win the Europa League than it can be to qualify, you know, for the Champions League via a normal league spot. So it's hard to know at this stage, I think, Rob, just what teams will be doing. I think there's a lot of guesswork involved right at the start. And then, you know, there are quite big price fluctuations on the day in Europa League and the Conference League, because it's on a team by team and almost a week by week basis what happens, because sometimes it depends. You know, if you're Barcelona and you've got like the Clásico at the weekend, maybe you feel like you've got to rest players for that. So it's a difficult one to bet on, and I actually prefer the outrights, because you know, you're just getting quite nice prices about everything, like the Liverpool, Barcelona, Rennes, treble, not a bad one to have. You know, it's 8-1 and 10-1 and 11-2. Yeah, that's a fun little tricksy there.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, we've covered a lot this week, so thanks very much. As always, we'll be back again next week. We've put up a lot of selections, as always. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Only ever gamble with money you can afford to lose. Mark, thanks very much, as always. Thanks for tuning in to all of you lovely listeners at home. We'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.